finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we had David Goff on, well, we didn't have him on, Game on RT had him on Monday night. And I was reading the quotes on Tuesday, and he was saying that Kieran Branigan was completely correct at 3 minutes on at the end of additional time. So he said, when you see an incident of serious injury or blood injury, when I'm engaging with Hawkeye in relation with a score, if there's a substitute happening, if I'm dealing with a melee or I'm consulting with umpires, I press the button on my watch. Or if it's a goalkeeper coming up to take a free kick. So he was listing out the occasions where he would stop the watch at any time during the game, never mind extra time. So Pat McEnany was on our show, and he was he was of the opinion that he would only stop the watch for injuries and for substitutions. So I'm not sure that's entirely correct. Obviously, unless if the booking... Say if there's a booking and the player's right beside you and you give him the flash the yellow card and it's all done pretty quickly, you probably wouldn't stop the watch for that. It's part of the game. So I don't think Pat's wrong on that. But on the occasion where Kieran Branigan couldn't find the two players and you have to consult your umpire what happened, you know, you're going to stop the watch in those occasions. So I don't think Pat was taking that into consideration. And maybe referees are under instruction. Pat hasn't been chairman of the referees committee for 3 years. So maybe they're under more instructions now to cut down on this kind of, you know, maybe time wasting or, you know, cynical play.
Yeah. And like you do, I know we hammer referees a lot, but you do see that the best of them, you know, rushing when it's getting towards the end of the game. Like they're involved in the match as well, and they are game management. So when they think a player is wasting time, you'll see them starting to wave and play on, or they'll try and give the card quickly and move on so they don't have to account for that at a time.
Like, yeah. So it was an interesting, David, because David was texting you back and he said we can obviously read it out. So he went a bit deeper into it and he said, if a booking is almost instantaneous, we don't really stop. We know the player's name. It's probably pre-written in a referee's booklet to speed up the process. We might just put jot down RP for rough play beside it. It's all very quick. But if I'm consulting with officials in relation to an off the ball infractions, or I'm booking two or three players at once, then I will use my watch to count up this time. That makes perfect sense. I do like the way he has the players' lists already, and he's not writing out the names. There's nothing used to annoy me more at intercounty level. What's your name? you know my name.
Like, do you not know who I am?
You act like a petulant child. You know my name, but it's worse at club level. They know you well.
Yeah. Name.
Oh my God, it used to drive me
ballistic. Put you in your place.
And you're already annoyed that this is not a deserved yellow. Yeah. So you're actually walking away. Come back. And it's even worse. Do you ever get booked in soccer? Like, it's a completely culture change with the referees in soccer. There are assholes, referees in soccer. They're completely like school principal, student type of relationship. It's, right. I don't know, when I don't like authority, I just didn't like it. But yeah, so that's it. And David Goff actually said 30 seconds is not added on per substitute. So Pat was wrong on that one as well. He said that you stop the watch. So a substitute could take 7 seconds or it could take 40 seconds. It depends on how long it takes the sub to come on and the other player to leave the field. You know the way they drag their arse trying to get off the field? That could take very, very quick, you know, quick amount of time, or it could take a lot of time. And again, if two substitutions happen at the same time, that's not 2:30s.
Yeah.
That's stopping the watch for both of them. Well, for both to come on and for both to leave the field.
I got a big kick out of David Goff explaining the actual watch that he uses, because he said that like when he stops the, say for when you're on about there, when he's booking a player that takes a long time, it constantly vibrates. So to let him know that when, you know, when he's done, that he has to tap it again, just in case he'd add on more time. But just what he said there about like, you know, booking a player and it's often quick and he might write down RP. I don't know. I think this comes back to how different refs, you know, interpret games differently. Because I, like, while David Goff might be quick, like I can think of Morris Deegan from Laois. time I've seen him ref games, he actually tends to take a long time when he's booking players, yeah, and not necessarily add it on at the end. That's when it comes back to interpretation again, and I think that's the biggest problem, like, across the board. We talked about Kieran Brannigan at the weekend, whereas Sean Hurson, I was watching the Mayo Mead game, and Mayo were blessed that there was no time added on after they allotted 4 minutes. So yeah, I think that's what people have the issue with.
I kind of laughed about the, you know, the vibrating watch or whatever. Like, I mean, you're in Croke Park, there's 70,000 people. Like, don't tell me there's not occasions where, like, you know, 3 minutes later you're running around, oh shit, just watch the vibrating, my whole extra time is gone. Shit, I'm just going to make something up.
Just go 2 minutes.
Because nobody can prove this, and they're humans. There's no way you remember every time, because there's people shouting at you here. There's a highly pressured, and suddenly it's just, oh my god, I'm just cancelling that, and I'm just going to make
this tick on my wrist.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely happened.
Like, definitely,
you saw referees looking sheepish in the middle of the
pitch. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But this is the thing. I find this very interesting, and I find it very important. And he's talking about he only adds on time for a goalkeeper coming up. So he allows the normal free take and routine or whatever. But if a goalkeeper, again, is dragging his arse coming up and trying to waste time, just stop the clock and add it on. That's fine. That makes sense to me. But what I kind of am interested in is, are every referee doing the same thing? How do players know what's wasting time and what's not? How do fans in the stadium know what's... Because when the timekeeping is so transparent, 35 minutes, then a board is handed up for 6 minutes. Now all of a sudden, everyone in the ground is in the dark. And it seems to be conflicting reports on what referees add time on for. I think players deserve to know what wastes time and what doesn't. Do you know what I mean? Because, well, that's not that they deserve to know. At least I think the fans... If timekeeping wasn't that important, why give us the extra time at all then? Do you know what I mean? This thing of 3 and 4 minutes being added on to the extra time, I don't like it.
Yeah, I would trust that they've been sort of enforced to all go out and do the same thing. They all know the rules or whatever. I just hope that they are sort of following it all. But maybe there should be something, I don't know if it's a press conference or something, but, like, you know, some sort of education, because there was a lot of articles over the weekend where people were adding up time. We were talking about it on Monday, not necessarily knowing that, say, 30 seconds isn't added on for a sub. Like, there needs to be some sort of thing where everybody's pulled together, referees, coaches and the media, so that when this happens again, we're all on the same page and we know what's happening.
Another thing Goff told you, which I was amazed at, is that if there's 4 minutes and 10 seconds added time, they round up to 5.
I think he said that to RTE,
Said that to RTE said that to you. That's unbelievable. Like, an All-Ireland could be lost on what he's rounded up. Think about it.
Yeah.
What's wrong with 4 minutes and 10 seconds?
Yeah, that's probably time that you didn't get the vibrate to stop.
Seriously though, rounding up, like, there's a lot of shit can happen in that 50 seconds.
He shouldn't have said 4 minutes and 10 seconds. He should have said 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Then you'd understand it. Oh, that's a good minute there, David.
All I would have thought 4 minutes, 10 seconds, you round down. That's massive. Yeah. That's basic mathematics. But anyways, we leave that there. Anyways, hopefully we cleared it up. I'm not sure we have it, for being honest. GA revenues, lads. So, good news for the GAA is that they had 16% increase in their revenues. They went from 63.5 million to 73.9. So they released their annual reports, annual financial reports, and that was in Croke Park during the week. So there's a 22% increase in gate receipts. That's what accounted for a lot of the increase. We know they increased ticket prices, and attendances, I think, were up as well. So Football Championship went from 12.7 million to 18.2 million. It's a huge jump, but they got 3 million extra from the All-Ireland replay. But it would still be up even without that. The hurling went up from 10.2 to 10.5 million. Football League went up from 3 million to 3.5 million. And the Hurling League stayed the same at 2 million. Now, this is all a good news kind of story. We know the GAA pump a lot of that money back, most of that money back into the game at grassroots level, games development, capital projects, all those kind of things. And that's fantastic. But kind of... the headline that was kind of coming out of it, which was, I don't know whether it deserved to be, was the costs of the inter-county teams. So the 32 counties, the costs came to 29.74 million in 2019. And Tom Ryan said this was an increase of 11.6 over the previous year, a trend that simply cannot continue. He said, quite apart from this, it's not desirable. Yes, counties will invariably secure the funds they need, but at the cost of immense pressure on the officers. This outlay represents a huge proportion of our collective resources. Right. So then he started talking about spending caps. And he's like, the solution may well lie with the rules and spending caps. I'm hesitant only because our track record with similar rules based enforcement around county teams is mixed. The solution has to start with a collective recognition that we take collective responsibility and start to reverse the trend now. So I think most people would be in agreement that spending costs are going very, very high. You know, how to stop that? A spending cap probably would make sense, but will that just drive it under? You know what I mean? Will they get donations that they don't declare then, and just, you know, one county is cheating and the other is not? It's not easy to actually know how to roll back on the kind of professional standards that are required and wanted by most players now.
And is it completely necessary to do that? Like, I don't think we should be afraid to be spending that much money. Like, it's human nature to push boundaries and improve and, you know, grow as people and as a game. And, you know, the revenue's gone up for the GAA, and I think a lot of that is down to how great the game's becoming. And, like,
yeah,
I don't want to use the word professional, but, like, everything is becoming better. Like, you know, when people want to know more, like, the athletes want to know more, and the fans, the media, they want to learn more from it. And I don't think we should be afraid of the amount of money that we're spending on the county game.
But just the only thing on that is that we've seen countless examples of teams that have been trying to keep up with Dublin, for example, and their spending has completely gone out of
control. County boards can't afford it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, and whether the solution here is Dublin can afford it. A lot of teams try to copy Dublin's professionalism. They run into debt. They can't afford it. Like, is the solution here to pool all sponsorship money?
It is.
And divvy it out equally? Because there is a serious, like, imbalance in what one county can afford. Then Kerry can go over to New York and raise millions. Mayo can do it on gala dinner dances. Laois can't do it. They don't have the superstars with all Ireland medals to be able to get. It doesn't seem fair. Like, the rich are getting richer and the other teams are struggling badly with the type of costs that are required.
So I've always agreed with that. Like, you know, we should be pulling the sponsorship and, like, you know, give everybody a fair chance, but not everybody needs to spend in the same place. So I don't think putting a spending cap on it is the right way to go. I think making everybody making a level playing field for everyone is the proper way to go. But, like, let the game grow and let people invest where they need to invest.
Yeah, the biggest cost, obviously, to inter-county preparations, I would imagine, is mileage, right?
Yeah.
So outside of Dublin, catering, right? Massive costs in catering, because now every county board, you'd imagine, has a deal with a catering company, and we're talking about hot meals after every training session and after every match. And that's a good bit. So catering is a big one. Then obviously gear, equipment, things like that, and the mileage. The GPA have gotten the hump from all of this, because they're three things that the GPA drive, right? So they increase the mileage rate, they demand gear, boots, gym membership, all things like that to county boards for players too, and they demand hot meals after every training session. So they drive the catering costs. Now, they are new costs pretty much, because when I was playing, there was no hot meals after every training session. You might towards the end. The mileage has gone up, that was always there, but and obviously the gear situation is a big cost as well. I don't think the GPA need to apologise for any of the three of those. They're basic requirements for inter-county players that are not out of pocket on mileage. They get correct gear, they get the correct gym membership, and they get the correct meals after training, after driving to training. They can't be rolled back on. So I'm wondering what are the costs outside that? Like, you know, you have nutritionists. Mm. A nutritionist wouldn't be at every training session, I wouldn't imagine. They'd be there in a consultancy capacity where they talk to the panel a couple of times. Medical is a huge bill. Now, do you want to roll back on medical? You can't. Do you know, this is just the costs of preparing an inter-county team. I was thinking then the backroom teams, geez, they must be costing
that
a fortune.
That was me, yeah.
But are they though? When you think about it, who's getting paid? A lot of it's volunteer based. Like a goalkeeping coach, would he be getting paid? An ex probably goalkeeper within the county? They might and they might not. I don't know. I was thinking, immediately I'm thinking backroom teams, that's the problem. It's not. It's the bread and butter those costs are probably going up, but we can't go back on them.
Probably the professional roles in the backroom team, like the conditioning coaches and
S&C is definitely one, analysis. But yeah, but like I think a lot of counties, they're volunteers too.
But I think these have made the game better as well. Anyway,
want to go back on
no,
that.
No, I don't think so.
But the GBA obviously think that it's those expenses that you're on about that the GAA are on about, because they kind of, I think we might get into the statement, and I think a lot of it was justified, but it seemed just a little bit defensive to me, because I thought it was okay for what the GBA to say, but it's also okay for the GAA to say that the level of spending on inter-county teams has gone way too high.
Well, it's gone way too high, but look at what they're generating, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're funding the whole GAA, inter-county teams. And like Conan said, would they be funding them with an inferior product without the level that this game has gone to? I don't know, like, really would it. And do you want players to be treated well? Like, I mean, there's an argument out there that players should get some sort of a slice of this pie. All they're asking for is to be treated, you know, very well. And as county managers demand all these levels and preparation as well, and they don't ever get the same bad press as the GPA get, who are the players' union.
Yeah.
You know, the GPA are in a position where their PR is terrible, and I was often critical of them because they weren't militant anymore, and they didn't. The big thing for me was championship structures, and that's still the big thing for me, is that if the inter-county season is shortened, so you don't have those costs over 9 months, you have them over five or six. Do you know, you're saving money. And one big cost reduction would be to cancel training camps. Who needs training camps? They're not professionals. They are a help. But I don't think players even like training camps, especially the older players. They're home from work on a Friday. They're collected then for training camp. They're not back till Sunday night. Mm. Good luck if you have two or three children. It's poxy. And then you're into bed and back up to the slog of your week again. Mm. I think managers are driving those rather than players. You know, do a full day Saturday in your own county. And, you know, do a morning and evening session. It's enough. And that would save costs. I saw a tweet from John Harran in Donegal. He was talking about the cost of overnight stays before league games. So do you really need to stay overnight the night before a league game? Best practice would say you would. Well, there's 10 grand straight away on your hotel and your meals and stuff like that. So there's probably ways that you can roll back on it without kind of maybe compromising the professionalism. We need the strength and conditioning coaches. Like, that goes without saying. Like, and some of these fellas probably don't come too cheap. I don't know. Like, the GPA did get very defensive. And I think in some ways they're right, though. Because
I don't
like this idea that the inter-county game is... And the CPA and the club players, and we all would agree with this. But inter-county players are club players too. It's not their fault. It's often managers driving this kind of stuff, and they don't get the blame. The GPA, the players' union, are getting slated for this.
Yeah.
Now, we understand a little bit about their salaries and all that kind of thing, and that's justified criticism. What is their salaries? And, like, do they need to waste time doing Super 11s and things like this? But when it comes to the welfare of inter-county players, I'll make no apologies for being right behind the GPA. So they're talking about, in their statement, it was very strong, considering that the GEA are complaining about how much this costs, when they are talking about the GEA proudly stated in the publication of their annual accounts that for every €1 revenue it takes in, it reinvests 84 cents across the association, for which it would be rightly commended. Approximately 90% of those revenues are generated through the inter-county game, 49% by gate receipts, 27% by commercial incomes, that which includes sponsorship and media, 14% by distribution from Croke Park. Like, I mean, that's the GEA should be thanking the inter-county players rather than criticising it. And, like, I don't like inter-county players being held responsible for how far the game has gone. They're not.
The only thing I'll say about it is that, like, the GPA mentioned that it was the GEA's problem child, I think. And there was a line there saying that we've seen this ploy of painting inter-county games in negative light used consistently to keep players down to make them feel like they're lucky to be involved in the games, right? So I get that. I get that completely from, let's say, going back over recent years. That argument has been levelled at inter-county players. But I just thought in this instance that the main takeaway from the GEA report, as we said, was the fact that just the cost of running inter-county team is spiralling, which I thought is fair enough to say.
No, it's fair enough. But why are the GPA so reluctant to shorten the inter-county bloody season? They don't want to give away the O'Byrne Cup games. And what's that doing? It's adding extra months onto all these costs, which are mileage, catering and, you know, the big ones. Mm. And then the S&C coaches or whatever these people are, if it's going to be extra, why don't they shorten it? That will cut it 2/3. That's what we want to shorten it. They won't do that. Why won't they do it? And ban training camps, ban team holidays, ban all those things. And if teams want to have, I know when there was closed season, county boards were supposed to not pay expenses during that time. And they used to have trainings anyways and the players would be expected to do it for nothing. Yeah. Like the GPA under Paul Flynn wouldn't stand for that. I know they wouldn't. There's a way of doing this to fix it without rolling back on the type of professionalism that, if we're being honest, that supporters want, that most of the players want, and the type of preparation that is needed to have the product we have during the summer, which shuts down the whole country, which contributes massively to the Irish economy, and they have figures on that as well, and that shouldn't be overlooked. This is a juggernaut during the summer that players do for nothing. And the GPA are their union, and they're involved, and they only care about the welfare of these players that contribute so much to the GAA and to the Irish life. And they shouldn't be criticised for wanting the best for them, yeah, ever. Absolutely.
And like one of the biggest figures to come out from the GAA report as well was that the top 14 executives are earning 1.76 million, which I think works out at an average of 125 grand. So then you have, you know, John Horne is probably up on, you know, maybe $250,000 or something like that. So when you look at those figures...
We don't know that for sure.
I know, you know, but like you're just speculating that the CEO is going to be...
You're speculating, Connor.
I'm speculating, not on behalf of the GAR. But just then you see the revenues of 73.9 million. All that this Indicon report that the GPA have commissioned that's going to highlight the GAA's contribution to the economy. And if you're a player looking at all this and you're thinking, well, I know, like, that's what the GAA are being paid. It's a GPA are being paid. This is the revenue we're generating. How long are we going to be happy to just take this sustainable amateurism that Paul Flynn is talking about? And I think, like, you know, the current generation of players have grown up with being amateur and they're more kind of willing to accept it, but more and more, and the more money that she is going to generate, the players aren't going to be happy to just take what they're getting at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like, in the midst of celebrating the increased revenue and the gate receipts and everything, the Tom Ryan saying this can't continue, the spending, and like, and I could understand why Paul Flynn and the GPA would be ticked off.
Yeah,
by it.
Me
like,
too. Because it yeah, go on.
And like you can't go back. Like, you know, I know we're an amateur organisation, but you can't just suddenly go back to training twice a week and pretending like, you know, we don't know that there's something else out there that we can keep pushing on and make the game better. Like, and I think part of the statement that said that, you know, with the inter-county game is important for fending off rugby and soccer for hearts and minds in the country. I completely agree with that. And I think the stronger the inter-county game is, I know there's a fixture sort of quabble, but the stronger the inter-county game is, then the more important it is in Irish society.
Yeah.
Look at Dublin, that's the example. Like, it's cool to play for Dublin. Everybody wants to play GAA now because of Dublin.
The formation of the CPA created, and there's nothing wrong with the formation of the CPA, but it did create an us versus them situation, and that should never happen. Mm-hmm. The inter-county game should be something the club players are massively proud of, and they are. They go to support their county team. The problem is the structure of... And listen, this is going on the last 10 years and I'm sick of it. It's the structure of the season pits people against each other, has spending out of control because the inter-county season's too long, and it's creating all these bloody issues. And it needs to be ripped up and started again. And that fixes everything. Now we can have an inter-county season over 5 months, that a complete intense 5 months, not a dribs and drabs 9 months. And it can have a good club season and the costs will be down in inter-county and we can all be happy.
Well, I wouldn't want the 5 month season. That's too short. Like, I love watching football too much. I know there's club football there, but like, we're all invested. We all talk about the county.
Six months then. Say March, April, May, June, July, August. 6 months, March to August, is enough. Enough.
Which is nearly combined what it is at the moment without the breaks, really. Because it's 3 months in, 3 months in, 2 months in the spring for the league, the guts of, and then 3-4 months in the summer for the championship. So if you condense them together,
Well, you see, you have the January month of the preseason, and that sends them back 2 months previous. Yeah. I think if you started, even if you started in February. And only had January as January is your pre-season. That's more than enough, because they'll tip away in the gym themselves. These lads are machines now. They're not like where you come back with a big belly on you. Say start in February, finish at the end of July. They're your 6 months, and your inter-county season is 7 months. Then from January to first, no expenses will be paid. No management payments, no catering costs, no nothing outside of January 1st and July 31st. There we go. Club season then after that. See you after. Just fixed it there now. No, but that's it, lads. I think it's definitely an interesting one. And listen, lads, it's very interesting seeing the GPA being back. Like, we have not seen the GPA.
Yeah, Paul Flynn again, fair play.
Paul Flynn again. There's been a notable change in him since he's taken over. There really has. And listen, when you look at it, who's the power with here? The power's with Paul Flynn. Based on those numbers, what happens without the intercounty players? Nothing. The GA is gone. There's no new clubhouses. There's no new facilities. There is no club. You'll have a club game, and that will be it. Do you know? And it'll be like the League of Ireland. All the stadiums will start becoming dilapidated, and there'll be no money in the game, and that'll be it. He holds all the aces here. So I think the GPA for too long were kind of going cap in hand to the GA. Please give us a few quid and we'll do whatever you want. Mm. I don't think that should be I wouldn't imagine that's the bargaining tactics Paul Flynn uses.
Yeah, I think a lot of clubs might argue that they're self-sufficient themselves, like, and they do all their fundraising and, like, you know, that they've built clubhouses on their own.
Half and half. They get GAA grants. Yeah. No, you don't do anything without GAA grants for any of that capital spending.
That was one thing, though, I didn't like in Paul Flynn's statements. Just like that little, it was just basically saying the club game wouldn't be the community and the organisation it is without the GPA. I think it still would. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
No, I think the GAA would be a lot worse without the county game, but that was just one thing that I thought. I think we could have a strong club game without the county, but who wants that?
Yeah, but maybe not the facilities, you'd say. No, without all that millions, like, I mean, when it goes back in. Conor McKenna, another bit of news here. We have Johnny Cooper coming up in part two. Conor McKenna, he's been homesick. He was home last year for his brother's wedding and took a month out during the season. Now he's left to come home. He's at 4 weeks before the start of the season. He's homesick again, and I'm not sure it's Essendon he's with, or they're not sure when he's coming back. It's definitely a very interesting one. He is apparently best friends with Cathal McShane, who's just landed a big job in a steel company. So are we going to see a handshake with Conor and this same steel company? What better way? No one will buy steel out in Tyrone. Yeah. If they secure Cathal McShane and Conor McKenna, I'd go up and buy whatever steel I need after myself. What kind of PR is that, lads? All it costs them is the two salaries per year. If the boys do nothing, scratch their arses.
Yeah. Don't need to advertise again.
I have to say, I don't know anything about Conor McKenna as a Gaelic footballer. I don't remember the minors when he was there, centre half forward. Apparently unbelievable. See the clips of him with the compromised rules, and he's a player that you could tell you would immediately love. A kind of all action, no standing back with this fella.
I remember seeing him for St Pat's Armagh in the McCrory Cup, just in and out of full forward and centre forward, and just could do everything. He was hitting 45s, he was hitting free kicks off the outside of his boot, he was scoring off his left, you know, with three men working him.
Jesus.
Scoring goals. He scored 1-7 in one of those games, I remember that. Like, right. They lost, you know, it was all him.
So Mickey Hart will have him as a sweeper then.
Yeah. I like the way you're playing halfback out in Australia there.
Yeah.
We could do more.
I could really use you on the counter attack. All right, so like you said, Johnny Cooper's up next, and I was doing a bit of research for Johnny. I'm going to blow my own trumpet here, lads, because this is a great quote altogether, and it's from me. And I didn't remember it, or would have been crowing about it the morning after the All-Ireland final, but I found it. It was from one of the podcasts, and this is what I said about Johnny Cooper in the summer of 2018. It would have been no harm him getting sent off yesterday, because Cooper's floating too close to the line now. I like the way Cooper plays. I think every team needs someone like him. But Johnny Cooper is going to get a red card in a big game, and it's going to cost him. Oh my God.
When was this?
It was in 2018, right. Summer of 2018.
Did you say it to Johnny?
To wait 2 years. Pardon?
Did you say it to Johnny?
No, this was just in my analysis. Fantastic stuff there, man.
It's really good. When you sent it, it was one of those ones I had no put down for you. It's like, all right, yeah, you called it.
Okay, right. So Johnny, like I said, I was talking to him yesterday. He was launching Avonmore Protein Gold. So that's up next after the break.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great. There was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out very well, unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Johnny, how's it going?
Great.
How is the body? We haven't seen you yet this year. You're not cracked or anything?
No, not yet. No, still there. Came back from holidays a bit later, so still trying to get back up to the same level as the lad.
Right, okay. So you went on the team holiday and stayed on or something, was it?
Yeah, went on the team holiday in the next few days down that part of the world, down near Australia. So, yeah, had a nice time, bit of a reset, bit of a break, and a bit of sun.
What's it been like celebrating the five in a row? Have the celebrations been more than other years? Like, it's never been done in the history of the GAA.
More than other years. It's hard to, I guess, compare them, but we certainly had a great off-season, lots of different opportunities to be out with each other, which was great, which is you get the victory, and that's really important, but also when you get to share experiences and company with the rest of the lads, and you're getting to know them in different ways, and you're getting to meet their families and their better halves and their extended families, it's just really unique in that respect. So yeah, you definitely get a good few opportunities and loads of different, I guess, insights into people and, as I said, experiences which you wouldn't typically get.
Yeah. Is there a danger this year, right? So you've done the five in a row, and I know you were saying in the lead up to the five in a row, look, we're not thinking about it, but I'm sure once you did it, you were able to appreciate what an incredible achievement it was. And now this year, that's been done. Is there, like, do you talk about maybe not switching off, you know, the danger for that to happen?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think the complacency thing is always probably there, and now, which you said, the history of the five in a row part kind of, you know, does it come in and does it play a part in a different way? I think there's enough older and experienced lads there maybe to warn and to guard off that. However, in saying that, it's probably still a risk in some ways that people, all the stuff might cave in, and certainly all the plaudits and all the claps in the backs, which is very dangerous in many ways, would also lead to a sense of entitlement or a sense of something in that respect. So, you know, we certainly enjoyed it for what it was. We took it all in our stride as best as we could, but obviously now new management team and everything else, we're trying to get back down just to the shoulder to wheel, hard work, and look forward to what's coming this year.
Yeah, so of course Jim Gavin's not going to be there. There'd be no complacency when he was there. Not saying there would be under Desi, but that must have come as a shock to all of you, right? Like, I mean, it was a huge shock for everyone outside the camp.
I know Jim's 2008, lucky enough, started working with him, so I've known him a long time.
Yeah.
Not much surprising me with Jim. I do know and appreciate the amount of time that he gives, but to give that time that he did give to the Dublin senior football team, he you know, took away from his work and his family, and so I'm acutely aware of all the other pressures that he had. So look, when he said it to us, it's like, I guess, known someone for any period of time, the first, you know, few days is, okay, what will they do next? Certainly, which we didn't have a manager at the time, so it's that bit of unknown. And he put a lot into as much as he could, him and his management group, I must add as well. So certainly looking forward, and having Desi, I know him from the club since I was this high, watching him play all the way up. So it's great to get to work with them now in that capacity and see how we can help each other.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about the sending off in the All-Ireland final, if that's okay. Did you think you deserved to get sent off?
Yep.
Yeah, because you remonstrated with Goff, but, like, I mean, I'm sure that was just playing the game, trying to put a doubt in his mind. Did you know when the foul was committed, I'm gone here, or...?
The question I asked him was, what was the foul or the offence for? So I was just clarifying in my own head what was it for. I didn't know if it was going to be useful. We could have obviously lost the game, and maybe, but I did want it in my head. I wanted clarification exactly what it was for.
Right.
So that's what it would have been. Did I deserve it? Yes. Did I leave myself in those positions? And whose fault is that? It's mine. So look, people say they're tight calls. People have opinions one way or the other. But from my point of view, it certainly was something that was deserved.
Yeah. How did that feel watching that game, knowing that you couldn't help and that you'd potential to be scapegoated afterwards for the five in a row?
Yeah. So when you walk off the pitch and whatever, maybe it's a 50-metre walk or probably feels like a 500-metre walk in some respects. But I was very conscious to come off the pitch with a composed look, because I knew that those five at that time, after I got sent off, those five or six maybe substitutions still to come on, so I knew people would be looking at me from that respect. A couple of minutes later, you have a 15-minute halftime break, so you know people will be looking at you in that respect, so you're trying to make sure comms, communications, body language, and your eye contact is up, just as it would be if you were playing.
That must have been hard, was it?
It was a massive challenge. I don't know how well I did at it, but it was certainly very much something that was in my conscious mind to to influence in the very little way that I could, but influence the group as best as I could, certainly watching the game initially, and then obviously in the second half, with knowing that what was coming straight between my eyes, and that's certainly in your head, and there's not much you can do at that stage. You've left yourself in that position. So a challenging experience.
I'd say in the whole five in a row, you have unbelievable memories, but the last 12 minutes of that game, considering that your neck could potentially be on the line for being blamed, how proud you must have felt of the players, a man down, chasing Kerry down like they had a man up.
Exactly, and it's such a great thing to see, and even seeing a bit with our recent game against Monaghan, guys kind of hunting in packs and working together and using each other, and just so yeah, like, and you know, the 2019 season is very much and deservedly so, and because of the work that they all put in, I probably contributed conversely to that. So I was trying now this year to maybe go the opposite direction and add a bit more value than I did last year.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about cornerback play. You don't bomb up the field like you used to. Off the ball.
Getting older.
Is that it? Because a feature of Croke Park, you playing cornerback, used to be you would just take off under the Hogan stand unmarked. Like, no, I don't mean jogging up there. You would go in like a full on sprint. Mm. And obviously, we know that that's half trying to get on the ball and half trying to kind of tire your man out. But when did you make the decision to kind of stop doing that?
I don't think I ever made a decision. I was probably told not to go up there anymore. They had enough lads up the top to try, but. Yeah, look, maybe it's something that will come back. I think it just happens maybe naturally in a play, or you see an opportunity and maybe they just haven't come about as much. It's certainly something I could work on, and we'll try to get better at, I guess.
But is it something you would obviously talk about as a team, not to clog up space up there maybe, or something?
Yes and no. I think anyone has the license. If you see a bit of space and you see an opportunity, using your own game intelligence to go and exploit that opportunity. You know, we have a very formidable set of players that can play in the halfback line onwards in terms of attacking, you know, and certain guys like myself maybe are more inclined to the defensive side of the house, whether that's right or wrong. But no, it's not something that was never really spoken about as such, just kind of more kind of fell, and the cards fell that way really.
Yeah, when did you kind of change in your mind to kind of really enjoying the defending side of things? Because you were all, in my memory of you, were always a wing back, and we were joking before we started here of us marking each other, and you wouldn't have been, you were a footballing wing back. Mm. and now you're known as a cornerback who prides himself on marking. When that must have taken a bit of an adjustment.
I probably wasn't good enough to play halfback at the time in terms of starting my inter-county career, so you know, the guy Jim actually would have, you know, tried me in cornerback and fullback. I would have been focused enough and would have had a good attention to detail, and he probably saw that as a good trait for a cornerback or somebody to go and mark an opposition threat. I would have played all my football up the minor, and a little bit beyond, but up the minor certainly around halfback, centre back, wing back. So I'm very comfortable in those positions. I love it out there. But I think fullback for me kind of removes the safety net. Yes, you have a goalkeeper, but there's no safety net anymore, which I like that it can go as it has against you, but it can also work for you. And really, that attention to detail can be the deciding factor. And again, you can get it wrong sometimes.
Are you? You're one of the obsessive players on the Dublin team, like Cluxton. Are you? Cluxton had a laptop out after for the All Ireland replay. Jim is on record saying, trying to obsessively look at his foot position, not to make that mistake again. Some of the players might not be like that, but apparently you're, you know, kind of obsessive about little details like that as well.
Yeah, it's not the best trait to have, but I found out in lots of different ways on and off the pitch. But I don't know if that's a good thing, but it works for me in lots of ways. It hasn't at times. I've got the balance completely lopsided for sports, and I'm not putting enough attention to other parts of my life. So, but I just find it very, very interesting. How can you take another sport or another perspective or another opinion and map it onto your world and then crunch the two of them together and get 1 or 5 or 10% better, or certainly try to seek it out. It doesn't always work that way. So yeah, obsessive, and some people maybe think it's a negative word or something that isn't maybe necessarily good. I am obsessive.
Yeah, so you're there a couple of hours before training with Cluxton, working on your own little bit, and he's kicking balls out or doing whatever he's doing.
Yeah, there's a couple of lads that now have joined the early club, but we were certainly there just doing different things, talking through different things, stretching, analysis, whatever, meetings, whatever we happen to do. I enjoy it. It's not for everyone, certainly not for everyone. People want to just come up to half an hour, and that floats their boat, and that's fine with me too. But for the world and the opportunity I have, that's what I do.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about cornerback play. Is it getting more challenging now? Because we know for the way the game had evolved that it was a lot of a running game. And from my analysis of you, maybe, or the Dublin fullback line, you'd mark from the front. Mm-hmm. Never a huge threat of a ball going over your head. Mm-hmm. And you were, you know, destroying your opposition. Now that threat is there more, would I be right in saying, where, you know, you might have to reanalyze, you know, your style of play potentially?
I think so. I think that's brilliant that you're getting a different stimulus put against you. It's not just the same roundabout, and you can get comforts in that as well. I think there's a different stimulus now coming our way with the advanced mark. Players, naturally enough, are getting better, opponents are getting better. You can have different looks, different feels, patterns are harder to break down and to research and to get on top of, which again, look, and it could work against you, it could be my words, but again, if you're talking about defending, the art of defending, and you're talking about researching and plugging all the components together, then you should have no problem because you're able to adapt and respond in the situation. In saying that, it's always good to have a player, you know exactly what they'll do and you'll beat them that way, but it doesn't seem to be happening as much anymore because players are getting better and better and better and more smart, I guess, more skillful, physically better and able, can run and can make runs harder. So it just improves, or it forces you to improve all the facets of your game and reevaluate, I guess.
Well, that's the thing, because I suppose what makes you so strong and Kerry so strong is that you can play a running game and also a kicking game, and maybe potentially some of the more defensive teams only had a running game, so they were a little bit more predictable.
Yeah, well, I think there's obviously strengths to different styles of play that you have. You know, if you go more compact and you squeeze space, teams might have less opportunity to score, but then at the same time, you don't have as many offensive bodies up the other side, so it makes it easier for them to defend. So you're trying to get that balance of, yes, you know, we had experience in 2014 and not doing so great defensively and getting our just rewards, and then we've had obviously, you know, experiences of doing very well defensively, giving you a platform, you know. So there's a fine balance, and in game sometimes it can look and feel different, and it's up to you to make, and the players to make those decisions to make sure the balance is always as balanced as possible. So yeah, it's interesting trying to in game decide between, you know, do we pull back and protect, who's playing behind us, who's playing in front of us, and you're trying to evaluate those. It's a very interesting and fantastic opportunity to get.
Yeah, you mentioned the Donegal game in 14. Like, obviously there was devastation after that game. Like, in a way, do you think you'd have won the five in a row if you hadn't lost that game?
I think it's a very powerful experience to go through, because, you know, certainly myself and a few of the other guys in particular that have been involved in the team, but involved heavily in that day. You know, I was playing centre-back that day, and again, it's all root cause analysis. Just go back to, you know, my position was one of the main reasons why they got a couple of goals. So you're sort of learning as you go in many ways, and obviously as you move up through the ages, you get a little bit more experienced. Would it have happened? Who knows? Or would it not have happened? Or would it have had more? But you certainly learn a lot about yourself and about the team, but it also tests your resolve and your hunger and your ability to stay motivated, if that's what you want. And some people have chosen since 2014 that it's not for them, or injuries and different things. So it really does test your ability to tell what you wanted, I guess.
Right, okay. One thing I noticed with Dublin is you're very good at problem solving. Like, say if things aren't going well at half time, you're very good at fixing them. And like, replayed All Ireland's, you tend to get it right the second day. Is that player led, or how much of it's player led? I have it in my head that a lot of it is player head, but I don't know.
Yeah, you come in at half time, you just discuss what different people in different positions, finishers as well, would discuss and have their opinion on different things. I mean, it's probably a complemented strategy, you know, players input and coaches or support, or the guys looking in from the sideline get the opportunity then, and you just find the middle ground. Okay, what's the one, two or five things you need to fix in the second half? But certainly there's a large mental capacity within each of the individual players, and then when you mash that into the team environment, then you're getting quite a powerful opportunity to actually go and problem solve and figure things out. And by and large, the things you identify at halftime are the main, you know, say it's an issue or maybe you're getting a bit of joy off something, by and large what we identify at halftime as a player group from obviously being in the game is not far off what the numbers tell you anyway. So it's just about trusting that, I guess. Obviously spotting initially, but also trusting then to give the players the autonomy and the power to go and actually execute on their words, which is obviously a learned skill and an opportunity you only pick up as you get to those really cliff edge moments as well, which is lucky enough we've been involved with. So again, it all kind of combines to give you, I guess, a bit of a greater power in that area.
Right, okay. I want to ask you before we finish up about Owen Merchant's goal. And what, have you seen him doing that before?
Never.
Never?
Never.
At what point did you think he's going to shoot? Because I was thinking someone's going to loop around him now, you know, and it's just going to be a hand pass off. It was sensational stuff.
Yeah, well, he left me marking two men, which is what nobody else noticed. But he took off, as he does, with his small legs, and he gets up the pitch. I have to say, I've never seen him score a goal in that aspect, but I have seen him invest, I don't know, maybe thousands of hours at this stage into himself and his own game. Skills wise, absolutely. Mentally, absolutely. His ability, and he's such a young guy, his ability to be so self-aware but also aware of others in terms of his leadership capacity. I'm delighted to see it. I'm delighted to see him get a lot of credit for something that, okay, the skill I maybe haven't seen him do before, but I've seen him do lots in other ways and help other people, and he's a giver, which is the main thing about him. He's not really a taker in that respect, so loads of years to go for him, so I'm so excited to see him.
And obviously from a Nafina point of view, you have Conor McHugh and you have Aaron Byrne. Wasn't as good against Monaghan, but was very good when he came on the 2 days before that, and Desi obviously is manager, so like, I mean, Nafina is firmly on the map.
If I don't get my game now, really, I've really no excuse. It's great, you know. Nafina is, you know, we have such fantastic leadership in the club itself, and it's such a massive club, and it's just trying to harness all the young people and the talent there versus then at the cutting edge or at the top edge, trying to then lend ourselves towards the county and everything else. So it's great to have Desi involved. It's great to have some of the other lads involved. I know there's a couple of younger guys again who want to be involved in the future. So it's trying to, you know, earn the opportunity and earn that respect to give you, I guess, if you want to get it, give you opportunities to play for Dublin and do different things in that area.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, best of luck for the year, and we'll see you back, I'm sure, before the league finishes.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We body in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
like, what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
So predictions, lads, there's only three games this weekend. The big one is the Division 2 game between Laois and Cavan. That's changed. It was 1 p.m. I've noticed it's 2 p.m. now, right?
So I could easily written this down. just in case you decide to go to Super Value for some cans.
But at least I know. Well, I'd be early for this one.
No, you'd be rather than late. That's your parents for the dinner on Sunday at 12. No, is that the...
Oh, yeah. Well, I can go now, yeah. But at Galway Tip in the hurling, lads. So I'm torn between this Laois Cavan and Tip Galway in the hurling. So I'll have to see what I'm going to do. I might... well, there's Wexford and Kilkenny on the deferred game. Anyways, I'll stop talking about hurling now.
Please do.
The football show. So there's Division 3 game then, Loudon, Offaly, that's in Drogheda at 1. And Division 4 game is Wicklow and Sligo, that's in Aucrim. And that's at 1 o'clock as well. So they're the deferred games. Although it's forecast for another storm this Sunday.
Dennis is this weekend.
This weekend.
Don't think it's going to be as bad as Storm Ciara though.
So. No. So I was thinking if there's more deferred games. Remember last year, it happens every year. They've only got 2 weeks to play with during the league. And during the time of the season where it's just the most terrible weather and, you know, pitches and everything, and they don't have much wriggle room. They're lucky that this week, the cancellation was the week before the off week, that they're able to do it. So there's a bit of news with Laois. It's very unlucky for Laois, really, because Laois obviously were supposed to have a free weekend this weekend, and there's an under-20 championship game fixed for this Saturday. So Mark Barry and Sean O'Flynn, who are two guaranteed starters with Laois this year, they have a decision to make. It'd be unlucky for them to have to play Saturday and Sunday. They're two very important players for Laois. Are they going to have to say sorry to the under-20s and play with the league game? It's a difficult one for them, for a position for them to have been put in, because, like, I mean, the seniors can't really do without them. I was looking at last year's championship team, lads. Laois are missing from the team that lost to Cork and Thurles. Laois are down, obviously, the three players that aren't available is Stephen Attride and Stu Kingston's. Garrett Dillon hasn't committed to this year that I didn't know about. So there's four players starting from last year that didn't play. Add in Danny O'Reilly, add in Colin Begley, and add in Martin Scully that all started that day against Cork. Mm. You're down seven starters from your championship team last year, and they're still going well. You're not sure, like, listen, I still stick by, I don't think Leitrim will go down now after the start that they've had, but you'd still stick by your thing where you're kind of analysis at the start of the league where you'd just be happy that Leash kind of stay in this division. It's just incredible the start they've had considering the players that they're down.
Mm. And actually it sort of sums up Division 2 because I was looking at this weekend and if they win they go top and if they lose they go fifth.
Well, that's it, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Like, how you know, things change so quickly.
Basic. Yeah, and just on the under 20 thing, like I think it's always a tough one and obviously like the lads to be able to play with their teammates and stuff like that, but if they're ready for senior, they're ready. Like, and if you took it to a bigger scale, this is David Clifford, you wouldn't really expect him to be playing the under 20 match when he's available to play for the seniors. It's just like, you know, when you're ready, you're ready.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's exactly right.
It's tough.
Dennis Booth is another one who started against Cork last year. He's injured. So Martin Scully, Danny O'Reilly and Dennis Booth, the three of them are all coming back from injury. So Quirk has had to find some new defenders. So he found Garrod Hanrahan. Funny enough, I came on Garrod Hanrahan in the intermediates this year. He plays from Mount Mellick. He was full back. He's a big physical fella. Like, he's aggressive. I scored a pint off him in 3 minutes. So based off those mats, I would have scored 17 off him. the
Pint for pint.
So, yeah, but he's a new find and he's an aggressive type of player. I thought myself kind of marking him that day. I said, geez, there's a bit of aggression in this lad. You know that
I only got a point off him. You must be all right.
Brian Byrne from Grey Cullen the last day, who plays wing forward for Grey Cullen lads, and he played cornerback the last day. So again,
got a point.
Quirky's listening to this show. Got a point. Play an attack-minded player in cornerback. Isn't that what we're all saying now? And let's put manners on these teams dropping out a player. They've a really young half back line now. Leash have with Sean O'Flynn, who's from Courtwood. He's only 19. Robbie Piggott, who is a big combative type of player. He was there last year. And Paddy O'Sullivan, who's a speed demon. Port Harlington are dominating the Leash team now. They have Robbie Piggott, Paddy O'Sullivan, Sean Byrne, and they have Colin Murphy. So they have four players on the team. They're the biggest threat within Leash for Port Leash. They're the one club Port Leash would be privately a little bit concerned about, that are going to, like, they won a good bit underage and now they're starting to backbone the senior team. So suppose them coming up has helped Leash as well. You know, good players coming out of that club has helped Leash pretty much kind of keep potentially a Division 2 level, even though loads of well-known players on the Leash team have all kind of gone.
They've lost a few, but even the spine of the Leash team looks like kind of relatively familiar. Just looking there, Mark Timmins, Kieran Lillis, John O'Loughlin, and then you've Evan O'Carroll in the full forward line as well. So they have a strong enough spine, and I think you might have mentioned this before, what I found refreshing from Michael Quirk, now I know he has to do this, but like, there was no mention of the players that were gone. There was no mention of the Kingstons or Stephen Attride. It was like, we have what we have and we're going to do what we can with them. So like, it's early days. They could be putting a lot into the early stages of the league. They have to, like, because I suppose if they were going to get relegated, then they'd be in danger of going down to tier two. And we talked, I think, before about like the danger of putting too much into the league, and then you're kind of busted flush come championship. But I know, positive signs so far. And as Conor said, I think if they win this weekend, they're top, and 5 points at this stage, considering how much of a bloodbath Division 2 is.
Oh, if they're 5 points, they're safe.
Yeah,
they're five points from three games, they're safe, because they might pick something else up. I think they'll beat Cavan at the weekend, even though the last two times they played Cavan in the league, they lost both home and away. But that was a much better Cavan team that they were losing to maybe 3 years ago. I think it was 15-16 they lost to them in the league, home 15 and away in 16. We know Cavan are decimated. I think Pádraig Faulkner versus Evan O'Carroll will be the matchup of the whoever comes out on top of that. Evan is just so important to Leash, both as a ball winner and as a scorer. Cavan had 13 different scorers against Westmeath. We know the way they play. They've no marquee forwards. They've no top level forwards, and that's no disrespect. Inside forwards I'm talking about. Martin O'Reilly obviously is still there. He's top notch at centre half forward. But they just attack from everywhere, and they make the game disorganised, and maybe that contributes to the kind of classics they're involved in against Armagh and against Westmeath the last time, because it's just helter skelter. You know what I mean? There's lads picking up lads that they're not supposed to be on all over the field, because Cavan have to attack from everywhere because they don't have, you know, probably the quality to play more of maybe of a kicking game and let them, you know, maybe like Leash with Evan and Colin Murphy inside.
And like they got 6 points from play the last day from defence, you know, and that's not including the goalkeeper who were taking the free. So, and like they've brought Oisin Kiernan back to wing back, they've got Kieran Brady at centre back, so they do have, it's a strong sort of defence that they have there, but people who can attack.
And
from
Smith wing back is a very he was a brilliant underage player, and he's a good attacking half back as well. So look, we talked about Monaghan picking the very attacking half back line. This is the way to go. Have scorers all over your team. If obviously if you don't have the inside forwards.
And then it boils it down to work rate then a lot of. I know you need more than that going forward, but like, you know, like that's a big chunk of what any team needs. Like, and when you can get everybody working to a plan, and if that is coming back and going forward together and just trying to score from all over, then that's a good starting point.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea that we all go up together, then we all defend together. I hate it, actually, but I can understand why Cavan would do it.
I mean,
that's the reality of it. It makes sense for their tactics. So who will we go for here, lads? Leash at home to Cavan. I'm going for Leash anyways, and I bet you the first week I tipped them, they're going to lose.
They're going to lose. I'll go for Leash as well.
Leash, and then sure if they win they're looking at getting promoted then, will they, into Division 1?
We can dream. We can dream. Right, so Division 3, Louth versus Offaly. Everyone's talking about Division 2 being this bloodbath, and the reason that is a bit like the Leinster Championship. Oh, it's shite because Dublin win it every year. Cork are going to get promoted, we all know that. After Cork it's a bloodbath, they all want to get up along with Cork and avoid Tier 2. So we've Longford on 5 points, Derry on 3, Down on 3, Tipperary on 3, and Offaly are on 1, but Offaly have a game in hand and can go, if they beat Louth who are bottom, they can go up on 3. So you, potentially if Offaly beat Louth this weekend, you're looking at Longford on 3, Derry on 3, Down on 3, Tipperary on 3, Offaly on 3. That's the most incredible league, national league ever here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now Cork shouldn't be in that division, we know that, they're too good, way too good, they will probably finish on 12 points, but you would not be able to guess who's going to go up with them and who's going to avoid the Tier 2.
And just remember, wasn't it the last game of the league last year where Offaly survived by virtue of their head to head against Carlow, and they beat Sligo I think by a point because didn't one of their forwards go and kick the ball away when the keeper had it on tee. So like as you said, we keep going on about Division 2, but Division 3 could be exactly the same. Whether whether Offaly, I don't know, I don't know whether I tipped them to go down or not at the beginning, so I don't want to roll back on that, but if, you know, if they don't get a result this weekend, it's going to be tight for them.
No, definitely. The thing about Offaly was I remember last year they struggled to avoid relegation but did a lot of close calls.
I don't know
what it is about Offaly, because at the Longford game I was listening to John Mahan after that. He was talking to Midlands Radio and he was kicking himself that they didn't win that game again. They had chances to win it, they had a goal chance, and it seems to be a regular theme with Offaly not being able to get over the line in close games, you know, which is not really a trait that you want in a team. Like, we know that they're a good footballing team, we know that they have a nice balance, they play a good kicking game, they play a John Mahan style of football, almost like a throwback, but I think that type of football is coming back.
Yeah.
And they have inside forwards Bernard Allen, Anton O'Sullivan and Keane Johnson. Keane Johnson hasn't been setting the world alight, unfortunately, because we're definitely keeping our eye out for him, but he's been taken off. He was taken off after 33 minutes the last day for Conor McNamee. They've Shane Horan from Kilmacud Crokes, then Rory McNamee, and they have Jordan Hayes. So they, like, we're not looking at a team here that is dropping players back behind the ball. We're looking at a kick passing team, and we're looking at a team that caused Cork a lot of problems down in Páirc-Uí-Chaoimh, who were by far and away the best team in the division, and then drew it home to Longford, who were the second team in the league. So I think Offaly are a good team at Division 3 level. I think they'll have enough to beat Louth, and they'll join the little mini league under Cork. That's my prediction.
That mini league scares me a little bit, because I'm just looking at Derry on 3 points as well. They're top of the mini league at the minute, but, well, Longford are, but Derry still have to play Cork, so it's like, right.
Well, that's the thing.
The maximum they can get is 9 points.
Down have played
enough?
Cork.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's going to be enough, and Down beat Derry. Derry got a point against the Leitrim, who haven't gotten any more points. So I'm thinking, I'm being pessimistic, but I'm thinking they're ruled out. Sorry to turn this awfully loud discussion.
But it is, and Tipperary have been a massive disappointment, really, the way they've been playing, you know.
Very defensive, from what I've heard, yeah.
And maybe he's looking at Quinlivan's not there. We only really have Conor Sweeney, who's a top, top level forward. And we have good industrious players around the field and good on the ball. Maybe he's just thinking, let's turn into a Fermanagh, who are all good on the ball and have one good, you know, one or two. It's hard to know what Power's thinking there, but they've definitely been a letdown, and a letdown really, if we're being honest, since the All-Ireland semi-final that year, that they just didn't push on. And no. Look, they're not a traditional county, and they probably have their own battles within Tipperary, you know, and stuff like that, and it's probably difficult for them to stay going.
I just wonder about the mentality in Louth now at the minute, because when you look at it from the outside, it's like they lost way too long for it. A lot of people do. They lost by a point to Tipperary. It doesn't seem that bad, but yeah. But they were six up against Tipperary in the closing stages, and Tip didn't even score a goal, and they came back and won, and like that's just an implosion. Like, and then I was just digging into the forums on Hogan Stand and stuff, see what the Louth fans are saying, and you know, they're giving out about some decisions. Paul Matthews coming off from half forward, people were wondering what the hell was that about. Apparently that was a big turning point for them. So
right.
It just seems to be, even though on the surface after two games it doesn't seem that bad, it just doesn't seem to be a good vibe. Yeah.
They're coming off the back of a very demoralising summer last year as well. So when you're not when losing no more than winning is a habit, and you know, and when they're in tight games like that, it's kind of invariably, until they kind of arrest the slide, it's going to go that way.
Like. We saw it with Sligo too, just went into free fall, you know, and like you can go down division, the divisions very fast. It's happened Leash, it's happened Westmead, it's happened like Sligo, like I said,
Derry.
It's happened Derry. Okay. All these teams can go down, and you wouldn't be surprised if Louth found themselves. Then again, look, Loud on the positive, Loud beat Offaly. They're on two. They're a point off all this. it's a bloodbath as well. There's no doubt about that. Who are we going for here? I'm going to go for Offaly, lads. I don't know about you two.
Offaly too. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to go Offaly.
Okay, so Division Four is Wicklow versus Sligo in Aucrim. Sligo are on second with 4 points. Limerick are leading this division, lads. And Sligo, if they beat Wicklow away, will join them on 6 points. And then again. Three teams in the mix on 4 points. You have Wexford, Antrim, and like I said, Sligo. So Sligo can get out of that. If Wicklow win, it would put them on 4 points, with Wexford, Sligo and Antrim, with Limerick on the top, at the top of the league. All the leagues are exciting, lads. Mm. Like all the league, usually in Division 4 you have two teams. I remember with Banty, with Wexford and Westmead, they ran clear. Leash and Carlow ran clear. There's no one really running clear of this one. You know, Limerick are decent, but I don't think they'll run clear like, you know, those other teams will. I don't think they're of the quality where you say, geez, they're definitely going up. This is another one where it's impossible to really predict what two are going to go up.
Just with if Sligo win this weekend, they're on 6 points and a very healthy scoring difference as well. So I suppose if anyone was to run away with it, they might be in a position to, because I know I always thought that Sligo, I didn't have them as much more of a Division 3 than a Division 3 team, but I never thought they were a Division 4 team. But then again, they're going to Aucrim, the toughest place to go this weekend. So, you know, that'd be a real morale booster.
And, you know, Paul Taylor is talking about the fortress. It's one of the greatest false cliches I've ever. Like, I mean, I want to do some breakdown of the stats of how this is based off history, and Mick O'Dwyer brought it back where he won, beat a few of the Ulster teams, wasn't it, down in Cavan or whatever, in Aucrim, and now the fortress was back.
Yeah,
they're Division 4 team, their home ground is not a fortress. That's why they're in Division 4.
I do remember the leagues were like 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B a while back. I remember Derry used to always have Wicklow in their division and always struggled when it was in Aucrim. So we're like, I know it's a cliche, but in my head it's like, that's a really tough place to go. Even though it was
the ultimate tough place.
It was never packed or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not a matter of that. It's a little bit boggy. And look, listen, we've talked before about different places that are not, like Newbridge and Kildare is a very obvious one. It's not a nice place to go because the pitch is so tight. If it's a little bit unusual, then it's not necessary. Kildare are very difficult to beat. Maybe the home teams just think they won't be beaten there or whatever. They know the yardage on the pitch. I don't know what I'm talking about here.
Well, there's been a cut no more than the Wicklow games you're on about. I think Newbridge has, not just saying this because I'm from Mayo, but I think that has helped the kind of myth of Newbridge as well. Newbridge are nowhere, and the fact that it's so tight and the crowd are on top of you. I think they're grounds with character as much as anything else, then, you know, that the stats actually back them up. Do you know, I'd say if you were to deep dive into them, I'd say they're not actually that much of a fortress.
Yeah, probably not. So who do we think's going to win this one? Like, I mean, Wicklow beat Waterford the last day, and their manager Burke was talking about a leadership group. Darren Hayden, Dean Healy, Rory Finn pulled everyone together at half time of that game. Said they got us all in a room and said, isn't it funny, the manager saying they got us all in a room?
We just went along.
They got us all in a room and says, look, this is what we need to do, boys. When we get into these positions, we have good players and a good squad. We know we'll get ahead of teams. Let's start managing it better. It was player driven, and like Johnny Cooper talking about their squad being player driven often as well. And like, it is important at every level of the game, even at club level. I'm always of the opinion that there's no better analysts of a game than the players who are playing the game. They're on pitch level. They have the bird's eye view. Who's winning the midfield battle? Half backs will tell you that. Midfielders might not like to admit it. You know, who's winning the breaking ball? Why is that happening? All these things. Like, I mean, seriously, if managers don't pick, like, I'd be going for little walks with all different players in different lines of the field, asking how did you think that went or whatever. I don't think that's a sign of weakness if you're a strong grasp on everything yourself. But picking their brains, lads, Jesus, it's definitely a smart thing to do.
Yeah, no, I agree.
100%.
Okay, right, we're all agreed on that. It's a great way to finish the show. Right, that's it. That's all we've time
for. We pick a winner for this game?
Well, do you want to pick a winner? Jeez, yeah, I'm going to go with Sligo.
Yeah, keep with the Connacht men. Sligo.
We've agreed on every second one, lads. So that's the way it works. Right, okay, we'll be back. We might be back on Monday. I'll see whether I go to Leash Cavan or not, or whether I watch the hurling show.
2 p.m.
We'll definitely be back the following Thursday before the next round of the league. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.